Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
And welcome to the Raw Review. We are the Dudley Boys of What Culture. I'm Adam Wilborn, joined by Michael Hamflett and Michael Sidgwick, here to review everything that happened on last night's episode of Monday Night Raw. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and YouTube, where we do daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review Man and Hour Raw, but also Friday Night SmackDown, show formerly known as NXT 2.0, AEW Dynamite, AEW Collision, pay-per-views, premium live events. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a round of the week complete with a review quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. As I said, though, joined by Hamflett and Sidgwick to review last night's Raw, the go-home show, of course, ahead of Elimination Chamber.
This is the good stuff, wasn't it? This is the really good stuff. Not too many matches, but the ones we got felt like they mattered for the most part, despite them all being pretty long. Like, if you were to read the match time, this, you'd be like, oh, that's Triple H skiving his way to another Raw. They're all like 20 minutes a shot or whatever. It was all paced really quite nicely. I'm banging to Elimination Chamber. There was developments in there. Me and Sidge covered these as main events in any arena. The IC title match and the Cody Rhodes Drew McIntyre match both delivered in spades to me in this one. Like, had a lot of nice things to say about this Raw.
There was some terrible stuff on this Raw, which I look forward to getting into. But realistically, I think the bookends worked really well. One was, for me, a lot better than the other. And I might have something sacrilegious to say deeper into this review. But this is a hot as balls promotion, like, it is hot as balls, and that's the thing that struck me more than like any narrative development, though there's some clever ones actually on the show. All right, if you were a Fed guy, I'd imagine you were absolutely loving this one.
Yeah, really enjoyed. I wasn't sure if I was just excited to get back to work or just really enjoyed this episode of Raw. I like all the new production touches they're doing as well, which we'll mention.
Well, this should mention it now.
Yeah,
basically. And you know what used to kill me? WWE for about two decades. Certain, like, I don't like the general production style, the commentary, the exposition, the scripting, that synthetic thing. I don't think that will ever completely go away. But there's two things where I'll look at an old WWE video if it pops up on X, or if I even watch something old on the network that I quite fancy. It's that silver WWE HD logo. I just know that there's literally a 97% chance that what I'm watching is going to be terrible. Something like Punk Mysterio or Punk Jeff Hardy with that WWE HD logo. It's like, oh, God, that's actually good.
Yeah.
Nine times out of ten. You know what I hate? And I hated it when Dynamite did it. I had an existential crisis when Dynamite started doing this. Yeah. Particularly when they actually had the houses at the time and there was no need to do it. The primary color bath of Raw and SmackDown is just a red light and a blue light.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. When Dynamite started flirting with that choice, it's like, it was like late 2021. I was like, what are you doing? Like, make it look like Nitro. There are people in these buildings and they might not be there forever. Illuminate them, show them. So that's gone, it would seem. It looks just a bit more like a takeover, this TV show. With a bit more color, obviously you need the red branding. But it looks a bit more like a takeover, and that was never my favorite aesthetic, even when I was, there was a point when I was head over heels with NXT, like, as a product. Even back then, it didn't look wonderful to my palette, but it's certainly better than the main roster, in that that's slowly creeping into the production now, as you'd expect.
It's just, so like on the like the ring apron, which is still obviously a video screen, but then the little mini screens that separate the crowd, it's like acting as a divider because, as you say, they can light up the upper bowl at the moment, and you can't always do that, so you should. It's just the WWE logo and Raw. And that's it. And I can't remember the last time it was styled like that.
Looks shockingly understated.
Yeah, as soon as they were able, they were adding more and more stuff to that. In fact, the only time I remember it was that understated was that ludicrous idea where they had like Raw Derek or something. Where they had like hardcore match.
It sucks now that like that.
Remember the hardcore match in the third hour or something?
And they were like, Mick Foley was like, things are going to get a little bit dark around
here. And the electric chair as well.
Yeah, we're changing it up in the third hour. And it's no, not. Like, you've just like...
You just turn the lights down.
Yeah, you just turn the lights down a little bit. But no, the especially on the ring, I noticed it, and on the barriers, because everything's video now, isn't it? So like on the barriers as well, just the WWE logo and Raw. It was shocking. Like genuinely shocking to look at a WWE product and it look like that. The biggest one yet, because we were sort of taking the piss a bit last week, can't we? There'd be like one camera angle that one used and we're like, thank God Kevin Dunn's finally gone. It's their product, so he turned it around. It's like, well, hold your horses just a second. But this was a pretty visually striking difference this week.
Were they Anaheim?
Yeah.
I really liked the bit there. Like, well, we've got...
Everything was hotter than the Iron Man.
Yeah, everything.
There were at least two matches that were like way hotter.
Mm. Punk comes out at the end and is like... All I'm saying is thanks for sticking around because I know you didn't in 96.
But there was a couple of times where they're like, this, it was like 13,000 people or whatever it was. Aye. This is packed. So they had that bit where they like walked through the concourse area and walked into the arena. And there was another bit where they had someone walk, like as if you were walking up to the ring after they came back from a break.
Yeah.
It just looked absolutely packed.
You have to use it because like, look how nostalgic people are for whenever there's like an Attitude Era clip and there's all the signs. And you'll see people saying, I wish I could go back to this. I wish it was this. I remember Dynamite a couple of years ago. It was the Quake by the Lake finale where Punk returns as a surprise, save Moxley, they have the brawl, whatever. JS.
And he hops on his foot, I believe.
I believe he does. The JS roller rings. It's white hot. And it was right around the time that people were posting that SmackDown finale where it's just everybody hitting the finishes in the middle of the invasion.
Oh, yeah.
And I wish wrestling was still like this. It is. There it is. It's there on a Wednesday. It's great. Like, there are times, like, in wrestling where you really do have to capture it because then it goes away and then you can look back at the footage and be like, I wasn't lying to myself. It was actually really this hot for a bit.
And they utilised quite a lot of decent hype videos. They did one before Drew Cody, basically, even though that opened the show, effectively, you know, people arriving and this is what we got coming up on the show. But they did a big thing, obviously, of Cody and Drew's history. That was the match that opened. It went basically 20 minutes. They're showing people's ratings on 2K now. McIntyre's 89, Rhodes 93, I believe. And they did that, yeah, throughout the night. And Rhodes obviously got a massive reaction. You know, just a great match between these two. After a break, we came back and McIntyre's using his boot to squeeze Cody's head against the ring post. Rhodes comes back and just hits a barrage of offense. Bulldog, forearm, power slam, disaster kick, Cody cutter, two counts in there. McIntyre counters a crossroads. They go over the top of the clothesline from Cody. That takes us to another break. When we come back, McIntyre goes for the claymore. Rhodes hits a super kick and a pedigree, though. Then Rhodes comes flying through the air and McIntyre just headbutts him. Hits a future shock DDT for two, which for some reason now really worries me. Even though there's nothing inherently dangerous with that move, I know that that's what took Punk out of.
Yeah, it's great. Mania. Effective. He's had two actual injuries with that as well over the years.
Rhodes,
helpful, weirdly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rhodes hits a superplex and then a, well, basically super Cody cutter for a two count. And then, as we're heading towards this climactic end, Jimmy Uso runs out. Cody knocks him off the apron. The referee's busy with Jimmy and... Rhodes sets up McIntyre for a crossroads and we get a carbon copy of the main event of WrestleMania 39. Solo Sikoa grabs him from behind, hits the Samoan Spike. Saw someone on Twitter basically saying like, why does Solo take his hood off to reveal himself? Like it's a big dramatic reveal. We know it's you. But yeah, he does that. Samoan Spike. McIntyre goes, Claymore kick, 1, 2, 3. McIntyre's a bit conflicted, but win's a win. And I just thought this is what, Cody's second pinfall loss.
Yeah, after Roman by the same means, obviously.
It was just genius, this.
End to end, fantastic. So a great match in front of a hot crowd. Mm-hmm. And the hot crowd does make the difference, because we say this all the time. You get great matches. What differentiates one from another at this point? It's not always the moves. But with Cody and Drew, you sort of have a bit of both. They can both goo. That's sort of undeniable at this point, but you've got characters that are just at the perfect point to be facing each other. So it's the matchmaking is as fantastic as the match really here. Drew is this locked in, motivated heel character that looks at Cody Rhodes, looks at that WrestleMania sign and puts those two things together. It's like, your decision is the reason why I'm not already going to WrestleMania. So I'm going to have to beat you up to make you pay for it. So he's fully motivated as a character. Cody Rhodes in front of him, he finds his biggest, like literally, Drew's a massive guy, but biggest challenge between now and Roman Reigns, realistically. But he has such a good run that he just still sees it as a confidence booster. I'm on the way to WrestleMania. Nothing can derail this. So, thanks for the offer last week, Seth, but I think I'm good. So, like, that's sort of there lingering in the background. You can see the way that Cody's wrestling with confidence. He's using his, like, supersized version of his moves to get Drew, but doing it with all the sort of the verve and the excitement of a guy that's got the shot. He's made his decision and he's on the way. So that's the dynamic of the match. That plays out throughout. And then by the time you arrive at the finish, and obviously this kind of helps out for later that you realize that the Bloodline are in the building and wanting to cause trouble and all of that, you have Cody being beaten by the exact same thing that's beaten him once before, which is a really nice touch. Plays into this, I still think, pretty good booking of yours that, like, Solo tries it again, and this time maybe the Rock's there to save the day, whatever. But they know this, people remember this, and they know that this means a lot
to
people.
Or if Cody kicks out again, now we've established
They know that this exact set piece means a lot to people, and they've used it pretty much at the perfect time. Like, there's a little bit with Seth later on, but they're going to go on to the Grayson Waller effect, and Seth's going to basically, well, now do you realise why you need me around? And Cody is the sort of perfect character to make the odd mistake every now and then, because that's ultimately what separates him from John Cena and humanizes him a little bit more. He can make the mistake every now and then because he just gets a bit overexcited. He's the same guy that will agree to be somebody's best man. So he's allowed to make mistakes because he is human, and that actually makes him better as a top guy than a John Cena. And the other thing was just with Drew, the little look to Solo followed by the wins a win was really nice character stuff, because he is at this point accepting of who he is as a bit of a bad guy that will take shit. He will deny it, and he will lie to himself about it and lie to all of us. And
what did you say later on? He says he was seeing the big picture or something.
Seeing the big picture, which is him.
Not looking at the whole pie, Jenny.
Him basically waving away that identical thing, Solo in the hoodie, happening to him at Clash at the Castle, was where all of this bitterness started years ago. And him having that little moment of going, do you know what, sod it. Like, if you can't beat them, join them. I'll have this, and I'll, like, take this huge win. Like, couldn't really love this more as a bit of WWE storytelling tacked on to a great TV match.
I'll do match and then post-match. I don't think it was great. I don't think it was great. I think it was very, very, very good. And probably, like, in a weird, weird way, better and more effective than a great match in and of itself, because it was just so unbelievably hot. I don't think the action slash content slash story was great. Very, very good. Not great. There's a difference with great for me personally. But my God, Cody Rhodes in this match, in that building, Jesus Christ, he could not look more like a world champion right now if he was plated in gold, like his skin plated in gold. He's just the champion. If there was a 0.0001% in the heads of, like, Levesque, Heyman, Rock, Emmanuel, whoever's pulling these strings these days, of, we can maybe do this another year. We can maybe do it another year, or SummerSlam, or beat the Hogan record. It's on record to begin with. Surely this match just eradicates those doubts. I mean, he's the champion.
Yeah.
He is the champion. What a phenomenal job he's done of grafting, getting to that. It feels so earned.
9,000 against Nakamura at the house show on a Sunday the night before. Like, so he's still posting the numbers. Yeah, it's not. There's the objective stuff there, isn't there?
Absolutely. He is the world champion. He just doesn't have the belt yet. It is as plain as day. It is as plain as Triple H's booking, except I can't use that joke because this was genuinely really, really good. Great booking. On the Pitchfork scale, I would say this is a 9.4. Not a 10, like, not the fable 10 with a circle around it, a 9.4. The reason being, it's bold to give Cody the loss. If you're Drew, you're kind of winning that match. So that's a bit of a permutation now. Like, what happens now? Does Drew just win the chamber and say, I want Cody as well? Do you have this in your back pocket in the summer if Drew loses the title or doesn't even win at WrestleMania and say, well, hang on, I beat Cody. Mm. You've put something in your back pocket.
It's G1 adjacent.
Yeah. You put that in your back pocket, and on the evidence of this crowd with these characters, that just intoxicating atmosphere, the sequel could be even bigger than this. Mm. And back to the match, I had the same feeling as I had watching Roman Cody. Roman Cody was a better match, more dramatic, louder. This is the TV version of, I could watch these go for ages, not get bored. I'm never going to think of it in terms of the very best matches I'll ever see, but I'm just loving this experience and the atmosphere. Mm. I'm just basking in the experience. The problem for me, and it's such a great idea as well, for Drew, of all people, to have the help of the Bloodline. What a lovely twist that was. Like, genuine narrative ingenuity, great character development. Like, really putting him over the top is that, when with Roman potentially gone for ages after Mania, top heel is Drew McIntyre, and he's earned that distinction. The reason why that 0.6 is missing, it was already pretty obvious enough that Jimmy Uso was going to cost Jey Uso. We've previewed it extensively. Mm-hmm. They telegraphed the life out of the fact that that's the finish by having Jimmy appear very early in the show. And if you're Adam Pearce, realist, what are you doing not finding him in that building is a matter of priority. He's here. Obviously, what's he going to do later? That is a plot hole. Mm-hmm. It's quite inelegant. It doesn't make much sense that Adam Pearce wouldn't do that. He's mainly sort of portrayed as this competent authority figure who's quite just. I know under McMahon there was this weird period where he was like a heel for a bit for some reason because that's the way they did things. But under Triple H's creative direction, he's pretty competent. He's quite fair, quite just, quite bland in a way that pleases me. Jack Tunney, a bit more present. He's an idiot now.
I like the fact
he is an idiot now for not getting Jimmy Uso the hell out of there or moving heaven and earth to find him, because what did he expect to happen in the main event?
They think it's the opposite effect. It's that WWE think it's when they're producing something like this, they think it's the opposite effect. It's that age-old thing. We need to let the fans know that Jimmy's in the building. Like, in their mind, it's like it's got to be that way instead of Sidge's way of it being, well, just keep it logical. Just if he's showed himself now, you're blowing your wad, we're going to kick you out. Like
hatred of the fans informs too much of what they do, even during a pretty damn good episode of Raw. The hatred of you, specifically.
I think all the security just had to deal with Solo Sikoa.
You said Cannon on Air Thursday, that's what we'll do.
Jimmy escapes, but I did like the fact that he was like, don't worry, Cody, I'm going to give him a huge fine. And I was like, it's a bit like when footballers or football club gets huge fines. I'm like, well, that's going to really change what they're going to be doing. They've only got Roman Reigns and the biggest star in Hollywood. So, I mean, how on earth are they going to pay that fine?
Yeah.
So, anyway, we get a big package for Gunther versus Jey Uso following this, and a package for Andrade El Idolo. Talks about being from a wrestling family, his wife being a wrestler, being used to the pressure. His day is now beginning and he controls his destiny. They had one of these last week, I'm right in thinking.
This one was better. They just add a bit of content to it. Like, last week was all about the mystique and the mythology and the fact that he'd kind of come back in a fairly nondescript Royal Rumble appearance, and then all you got was this passing interest video. Didn't feel like much of a build-up. This was sort of a reintroduction of the El Idolo character versus the one that had existed in WWE before. So this was a development. Like, the Andrade you had before is not just the guy you quite liked in the Gargano match in NXT. I've grown, I've got this, I've got that, and I'm... start.
He's regressed, if anything, but...
But, like, this was him telling you that now I'm better than ever, and it's a work, isn't it? So you've got to try and buy it, if you can sell it.
We got a quick recap of what happened with the ending of Cody and Drew, with Pat McAfee doing his telestrator thing. I've only ever seen it in, like, NFL before, but he's just zooming in. If you look at Drew's eyes here, and if you look at where the thumb goes, which is into Cody's throat, it's...
Jerry Lawler and Bobby Heenan used to do this to great effect. Really funny. I didn't like this, but I do like that they just try stuff. Like, I would want to see more of the experimenting with things, because some stuff will take and some stuff will work. This one didn't for me, but I want to see more like this all the time.
I want to see more technique by Taz.
Yeah.
I want to see that. Remember, he's a heel and did it.
Yeah.
It's great.
This goddamn loser can't get out.
Yeah.
Choke him out.
So trainers checking on Rhodes. Pierce, as we mentioned, comes in and says, don't worry, Jimmy and Solo are definitely gone. Huge fine. Do you need anything? Cody's like, I'm fine. And then Seth came in and just gave him a look, which is all he really needs to do. And they're going to be obviously at the chamber doing the Grayson Bloody Waller effect, which is, like you say, where it's going to hopefully develop from there.
Yeah, the I told you so moment for the moment.
We had a spot for the final spot in the Women's Elimination Chamber. It was a Last Chance Battle Royal featuring Xia Li, Valhalla, Tegan Nox, Natalya, Indi Hartwell, Candice LeRae, Maxine Dupri, Ivy Nile, Electra Lopez, Caden Carter, Katana Chance, Meechin, Zoe Stark, Zelina Vega, Shayna Baszler, Chelsea Green, Alba Fire, Isla Dawn, B-Fab, and a returning Raquel Rodriguez. Great to see her back.
The graveyard.
There was a bit of me that thought, is Jay Cargill just going to come out and eliminate everyone here for a split second?
I think all of this occurred while you were off. Did you go off after they kind of spoiled that Cargill was going to be in the match?
Yes. So by the time it was the SmackDown where they announced we're going to do all these matches to build to the chamber. So Friday was my last day.
There was a graphic.
I saw this.
Like blurred out, but you could make it clear exactly where everybody was.
Couldn't you, on there?
Yeah, it was like before even the SmackDown qualifiers, and Jade Cargill was the sixth person. So then that was out and about, and then the story broke that plans had actually changed and they decided to take her out of it. When you watch this, and like this was nice. Like Raquel Rodriguez hasn't had the best time of it since she went off. She was like, forget what illness she was struck down with. But it was sounding pretty serious. It's nice that she's back, and this is like, why not, I suppose. But when I look at this and then I think about how difficult the chamber can be anyway, I think it's for the best that Jade Cargill dodged this entirely. I think this would have been, subtraction by addition. I don't think she'd have come out of this.
Well, she'd have to beat her, presumably.
Possibly,
someone has to
pin
her. I mean, it doesn't even matter if all five of them do it, it's still beating Jade Cargill.
I just think it would have been really hard to shine in this particular environment. Mm. So probably for the best.
No one did.
Maxine Dupri was eliminated first, almost eliminated Chelsea Green, but Valhalla got rid of Maxine. Valhalla follows her out with Raquel doing the elimination for her. Xia Li, Isla Dawn. Tegan Nox tries to surprise Natalya by eliminating her. But Natalya counters a sort of reversal of...
Do-over of the Rumble, but they switch this time, yeah.
Zoe Stark, Shayna Baszler eliminating B-Fab. Green keeps avoiding elimination. Electra Lopez gets rid of Zelina Vega. And Meechin eliminates Electra because she's celebrating, and those two brawl to the back. Chelsea eliminates Candice LeRae. Shayna Baszler eliminates Indi Hartwell. Baszler and Stark start teaming up to get rid of Katana Chance. Rodriguez gets rid of Alba Fire. Ivy Nile gets rid of Natalya. And the final four in the end are Baszler, Stark, Meechin, Rodriguez. Baszler and Stark team up to get rid of Meechin. But Rodriguez fights off both Stark and Baszler, eliminates both of them. She starts celebrating like she's won, then you realise the bell hasn't rung. Chelsea Green slides back in, and the crowd think, okay. But Rodriguez counters, chucks her out. Raquel is the sixth person in the chamber, which we'll get to a bit more later on.
Not being facetious, well, I am. Has Triple H ever booked a battle royal without doing that finish?
They love this one.
That's a good question.
They love this one.
They love it. Honestly, Triple H is almost as bad as father-in-law for like booking the same things over and over again and indulging his tropes. And as these words leave my mouth, I realize that's absolutely the fucking worst, the absolute fucking least of the problems. So I will just strike that from the record. Mm-hmm. That being said, on his own terms, Levesque is pretty creatively bankrupt when it comes to these battle royals.
I cringe a little bit at the point now when you're watching the person celebrate.
Does he think it's like this cool thing that he's just invented?
I know, it's so, like, it's so
every
out,
time it happens, it's terrible.
The only good one is
there's no drama as well.
Is the Orton Edge one, isn't it, Nicholas?
So if your mental health's in pieces, it's a great bit.
Yeah, he does do it a lot.
He does do it a lot. He does it too much, if anything. And the action was pretty bad, And like even the finish was like, so Stark who went out last?
Yeah.
Like, he missed ahead by a million miles. Like a million miles. You can even hear some groans. Oh, God. It's a weird one, this, because the action was subpar. it went ages. It's a battle royal to begin with, so you're literally fighting an uphill battle. The best you can hope for is like a decent last 5 minutes. So like just crap, pretty crap across the board, and there was no even suspense of my Chelsea Green win. It's like it was 2 seconds. It was like a comedy spot that didn't land, and the finish looked terrible. And on top of everything else, nice for her. Raquel Rodriguez, that she's back, but let's not pretend that this push is taken on the main roster at all.
No.
I can't take it seriously because it just hasn't panned out and they're not really 100% behind her. Like, she's not winning a women's title, I don't think.
There was not even a shred of interest in the Indy Hartwell gets to go home story as well. And like, you weren't given any reason to think it. Mm. It was all just headcanon stuff. But you thought, oh, well, maybe, and then they can make a nice thing of it. Nah, forget about that. You're not getting that, none of that sort of stuff.
I dread how long, well, we'll talk about it later.
I thought, like, especially because she got so close to the end, I thought Shayna Baszler stood a chance. I've never seen her in an elimination chamber.
Did pretty well.
Did she?
Pretty well, let me tell you.
I don't recall.
What, doing this all over again?
why didn't you have that thought going through your head for the past 4 years?
I've had a week off.
Five, actually.
Five years. Jey Uso cuts a promo saying he's going to bring down an empire and win the IC title. Yeet. And then we get this.
The empire brought down him. Two-sentence horror.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Before we go any further, though, this show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now, we all carry around different stressors. They can be big life worries or just, you know, little things like your favorite wrestler not being used properly. The thing is, when we keep them bottled up, it really can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever is weighing you down. It is really helpful too for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. Therapy basically empowers you to be the best version of yourself. So why not give BetterHelp a try? It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and best of all, suited to your schedule. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/whatculture today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/whatculture. There we go. Sit down interview with Rhea Ripley and Nia Jax. Cole says, you got butterflies, Rhea? And she says she's worked for this. She wanted this. The last time she competed in Australia, she was on the Indies 7 years ago. She wasn't yet comfortable in her own skin. She nearly wanted to quit, but she had to sit down and remind herself exactly who the hell she was. She isn't like everyone. She proved her doubters wrong. She reminded herself that she is Rhea Bloody Ripley. And Nia says, that's cute. I'm twice your size and I've got triple your talent, which I thought was a nice line. I'm happy it's in your homeland. I mean, technically, as someone pointed out to us, it's also in Nia's homeland. I think she was born in Sydney. Mm-hmm. But she said, I'm happy it's happening in your homeland so you can be closer to home to go home and cry. And Rhea says, oh, talk all you want, attack from behind all you want, but in Perth, face to face with me, everyone's screaming for mammy, you're going to crumble, all your momentum's going to fade away into nothing, you'll realise you're just not good enough. And she throws down her mic and Nia just scowls at the screen.
While I'm on the subject, Levesque is also a huge fan of someone storms out of, someone angrily storms out of split screen interview. Loves
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
He loves that.
And yet, even though you almost never see it happen, it's always, you'll see some critics going like, it's like real sports sort of feeling thing.
It's happened once in the UFC, hasn't it?
Yeah, like
it's very rare.
Give me five.
They'd like to be able to get another line in, otherwise you've just given your opponent an open platform to say, bell end.
Give me five examples of this happening in real sport. Yeah.
I didn't, there was the odd cute line, but this just felt like wrestlers reading from a script for me.
It lacked, it lacked a killer line. That's exactly what it is. Like the we were talking yesterday. I don't think it will anymore. I think the hope's gone. I thought this stood a chance of the main
hope,
event.
The hope of Nia Jax headlining stadium.
Nia Jax and
you
Rhea
are
Ripley.
Absolutely biased.
I like big bastard moments. And Rhea Ripley headlining that show, it's going to be a big stadium event. I thought that was going to make for a big moment. I'm not even a Davey Boy Smith guy, but you wouldn't deny the man a Wembley main event, you know? It's that sort of thing. I don't even like Will Ospreay. Got to put him on last. Like, I just thought Rhea Ripley in that environment could have been great. And this was a little bit of a tell, I think, from WWE that even they don't really see it there. Mm. It'll be big. It'll be huge on the night. Rhea will get a massive result. She'll win, obviously. But it's a semi-main, isn't it?
It was a nice line. I'll get to it later. Nice line from Raquel being like, you're all counting on Rhea retaining, but if Nia retains, I'm the only one who can beat her, basically.
Well, it was about time somebody said that, because between that and the Las Vegas thing with Becky Lynch,
there's
two separate matches that are full on conclusions.
Yeah,
somebody should probably flag it. Wait a second.
Then we got...
It's like 12 of us. Why are we here?
Then we got Truthline, which was a Dateline-esque segment. Jackie's chatting to Truth in the rain outside the Honda Center. We see his history with the Judgment Day, with them as babies, children, growing up, and special moment when they first met. It's like the first time John Cena tried on a pair of jean shorts. It went bad. Damian Priest attacked him and made him feel like he was as sad as when he was watching the finale of This Is Us. Now he's got DX in his corner, though.
Stop laughing.
I did laugh at that bit.
Such a funny cut. Like, I've got DX with me. Shawn Michaels and the Cerebral Assassin Triple H. Go, not them.
There was also a funny line about, this must have been how genuine felt when he wrote the song Pony. And I was like... Anyway, he just walked off. It was. I knew exactly this was where it was going to go. And you really like it. And I figured you probably weren't going to be
a fan. It's absolutely terrible.
It was Pony, in your opinion.
I thought it was like language or something. No, it's absolutely terrible. It's just not funny. It's just not funny. I'm 38 years old.
It's great. I liked him in the poncho as well.
Yes.
Funny look. is that the DIY version of the Live, Laugh, Love stuff, isn't it?
Yes.
It's absolutely...
I can't remember when, if this was earlier or later on, because early, at some point there was... All the Netflix guys, and they're having a great time at Raw. And then Cole starts talking about WWE and the UFC, and Samantha Irvin introduces Michael Chandler, UFC fighter. He grabs the mic and cuts a promo, calls himself the most entertaining UFC fighter on the planet. He says, there's a man from Ireland that's been making me wait for way too long, and I still got one dude on my mind. Conor McGregor, get your candy ass back in the octagon. We've got some unfinished business. I love this.
Guy had a hideous energy, didn't he? Didn't know him before this. Snatches the microphone out of Samantha Irvin, like, oh, ugh. I've only come to realise just how chud adjacent UFC and MMA is.
You're joking.
I didn't know. I it doesn't exist to me, really. And then I get exposed to it and it's like,
you're like reading The Guardian.
I just
what the
I had no idea.
This has blown my fucking dick off.
Well, we talked about this last week. I said I knew it was like a bit like right lean. I didn't realize it was a full on MAGA fed.
Oh, yeah.
But I had no clue. So like,
even if you take the politics, like the personalities to be in the octagon, you got to be like maybe an alpha male.
No, I don't watch. It's too.
It's like about 600 f***ing Undertakers in there.
I haven't had a chance. I haven't completed the network yet. There's too much to get through.
Completed like the network. Nicholas, I showed Hamlet this morning as well. Michael Chandler kicking Tony Ferguson's head off.
Yeah, and I like him now because he does backflips and he's jacked.
I'm going to find a picture.
Love the idea of Hamlet just going, oh, it's UFC. They're all there, you know. I'm there, vegan food and reading The Guardian. What a nice bunch of lads. What a nice bunch of lads they seem like over in that Ultimate Fighting Championship. Well,
That's the
Brian Danielson's a vegan.
That's a freeze frame.
He's a nice lad. He kicks people's heads off.
That's a freeze frame of the kick that I showed you.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, he does a flip. People are like, do you like that? Do you want one more? He does another flip.
Yeah. Is it the best look to be advertising a certain UFC fighter on a show when you are embroiled in the business you are now embroiled in?
Yeah. You can put more of this to come in it, though.
Yeah.
That's the reality.
Yeah. I really like this. I hope we get more of this sort of thing, because I think, you know, people always automatically just go, oh, if there's going to be a crossover between UFC and WWE, oh, you've got to get Conor McGregor in there, he can talk. And I was like, it's not the only one who can talk, and you've got some, you know, people who, you know, I talked about in the news this morning, Israel Adesanya, in terms of like bringing the pomp and ceremony of wrestling into their entrances and things like that. And yeah, I mean, I think it says big things that they decided to give this platform to Chandler to call out McGregor after all the Ultimate Fighter stuff.
It's funny, obviously, because the guy's on Raw and now TKO and everything. We're having this chat in 2024. It's basically one Dave's been grappling with in the Observer for 20 years, isn't it? Because there's been the people that just like absolutely frigging hate how much he fell in love with MMA when just wrestling was on its ass. And just like, yes. I think I like this now. And like, it was big business, and both sort of risen back up at the same time. And now Monday Night Raw is the place in which we have to debate just how much you're going to really want out of this sort of thing. I didn't really care, and then I like the clips of him as a fighter, so it's like, yeah, you're fine.
I will say, one, not a good idea to have a certain UFC fighter advertised, in effect, on your show amidst the backdrop of everything. If I'm going to park all that, I will say, if they're going to do these integrations, this synergy, it was so short that you could at least be assured, if you're a WWE fan, there's no interest in UFC, that it wasn't a huge imposition of your time.
Yeah. You get these product placement guys popping up in like all the time.
They showed boxer Callum Walsh later on, and professional bull rider John Krimber as well. right. We got a serious Chad Gable promo, which got me very excited for where we're hopefully heading.
He looks like Michael Chandler. Seen him back-to-back.
He said he was tired of Ivar trying to tear down Alpha Academy. He said, leave your crew in the back. I'll leave my crew in the back. You should do the same. And Ivar said, deal. The gods have spoken, and my path goes straight through you. We'll get to that match a little bit later, because then it was time for DX and Awesome Truth to team up.
Man?
To take on the team of...
Why are you laughing?
They did it. I called it yesterday. And they're like,
Well, don't we have to explain what they did in
that's it.
To explain.
Of course.
The 25-year-old gesture that every wrestling fan knows. We'll talk you through it.
We
cracked the case last year. We know what they're talking about now.
They were taking on the tag team champions, Damian Priest and Finn Balor, Dominic Mysterio and JD McMahon, of course, collectively.
They're in the f***ing judgment day.
I miss that.
We went to a break.
You're totally over it, aren't
you? I'm over it.
Went to a break quite early on.
It was like over it, never was it, or whatever it was.
Kip Sabian.
Was it?
Underrated over it.
That was it. Yeah, had the
box on his head.
A box, that was it.
So breaks down very
took it off in the Dynamite main event. It was like, that's Kip Sabian.
Yeah, that's Kip Sabian.
He lost the first PLE or whatever it was.
In the kickoff.
On the kickoff. Lost the back. Back kicked his ass.
I'm a British wrestler, and I'm a bit better British wrestler than you, actually. Well, no, you're not. You just got beaten handily on the pre-show.
Put the box back on.
A waste of time that was.
Big brawl.
He was trying to go for that sort of, you know, when like, people in Hollywood go a bit mental, but play with that public image and like go around the streets and being a bit weird.
Mm. Shia LaBeouf did something similar, I believe.
I think he was
going
for that. I didn't want to invoke the name because I think he's bad news. Mm. But you know what I meant? Yeah, so you can't see anyone's name. Yeah. Can you? Yes, can it? But I think that's what he was going for. Yeah. You were meant to be like, the box. I was just like, oh, right. Good idea. It didn't work.
Yeah.
Mm. Very early on, we get a huge brawl. All the heels get sent to the outside, and
Joaquin Phoenix do this really elaborate, years long bit ahead of a film release where people genuinely thought, "Oh God, is he the latest to kind of go off the rails?" And it was just this really elaborate.
Did he do it on Letterman or something? He was just
I don't know.
I seem to remember, yeah.
And there was like,
I'm not really there.
I remember that rings a bell. Yeah,
and like he pretended to do a vanity hip hop project.
So yeah, all the Judgment Day gets sent to the outside.
Holy weird, eh?
And you think it's time to go to break, but it wasn't actually time to go to break, was it, Sige?
No, it was.
Don't sing me again. They do the DX shot.
Right, so like, I just want to break this down a second.
Yeah, please
do. Break it down. Because like, R-Truth is an idiot, and I love him for that. He thinks he's in DX. Miz is R-Truth's mate, knows he's an idiot, is going to let him think he's in DX. Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa look like having the greatest night of their frigging lives.
Johnny Gargano being a DX cosplay.
DX? We did it, Tom.
Hang on. So you're telling me that Johnny Gargano cosplaying as Shawn Michaels gave him great amusement and pleasure. He's been doing it for 6 years.
Like Candice is just like waiting for him after the match. Like, you sent it to Sean yet? You sent the clip to Sean yet?
Do you remember when they did the NXT photo shoot and it was all like, which WWE person? I think he was maybe even world champion at the time. Which WWE person you want to do? And you could just feel Gargano's gone. But I get to be Sean and we're not doing this. So.
I can do the last 2018... The last 6 years of Johnny Gargano's career through the art of mime. So I'm sorry if you're not on YouTube, but I'll tell you what I'm doing in about 2 seconds.
Nice.
He looks, stares at his hands, and then he gestures like you should suck his cack with a via crotch chop.
Yeah, because that's what that means, we learned.
Yeah, we did that, because it's talking about suck it.
Mm.
Suck my cock. That's what it means. That's what it means.
That's what the it was. It was the penises.
Right. We come back from a break and build effectively to a R-Truth hot tag, which did get a great reaction.
Oh, my God. Aberration of a crowd.
He did. Did John Cena come back?
Aberrations this year.
Not really, because he died on his arse against that main event, didn't he, with the money?
I don't know. Did you see the Royal Rumble? Did you see Raw the other week?
Literally two rule-proving exceptions. Everything R-Truth has done in the ring has died.
I'll find you four and I'll f***ing tweet him.
This is the hill he'll die on, this is it.
I've just watched him interact in matches. And
he's a great tag wrestler.
And stop saying great.
And it's building up to a great tag moment.
Stop saying great.
In front of a great crowd.
Name a great R-Truth tag match. And let's use, we are podcasters and we are writers, Hamflet.
Yep.
Let's use words correctly. Great.
I'll go with the Judgment Day versus the Generation.
Don't use them like Tony. Don't use the word great like Tony Khan. Actually, use it in the way it's meant to be used. That's all I ask.
I think he's going to say
a great tag team.
Judgment Day versus Awesome Truth at WrestleMania 40. That's what he's going to say.
That's the second one after the Judgment Day versus the Generation X. Last night's Monday Night Raw. The tag match in R-Truth's head.
Good to be back.
I hate it, man. He was like this when you weren't here as well.
The thing is about this.
Do you want me to run through the
end? Just quit. Who cares?
He did John Cena's comeback.
You do, Dr.
No, this is the point. You can have both. You cannot give a f***ing shit just for a nice moment at WrestleMania where they win the belts. And then, like, somebody, I was talking
There's a lot of pearl clutching about this, isn't there?
Yeah.
Like, I don't care about match quality, by the way. I want to be amused.
Like, range, I think it's going to be nice. I was having a chat with somebody in good faith about this on X this morning, and they pitched, fair enough, I suppose, if the Wolf Dogs kill him the next night. Like handshake emoji. There you go. Yeah. Like a great start. Awesome Truth. I realised
I don't care about your precious match quality.
It hit me that like it's R-Truth and we said that like R-Truth in the Judgment Day was never Sami Zayn in the Bloodline, but it's absolutely Miz Dow. And how annoying was it when they just blew off Miz Dow in that Battle Royal with the big show?
I didn't give a toss.
Really? People were pretty annoyed about that.
People were. That's the thing. I never want to think that I'm speaking on behalf of people and doing that. I thought this was great. And I'm inflexible about why I thought this match was great. Like some people, some critics can't understand that people don't like Dave Will Ospreay. They just cannot get it. I don't want to ever be that guy. But people loved it. It was massively over, and it was stupid of them to kill it dead when it was clearly this thing. But it probably had a shelf life. Yes. In fairness,
and I think this is
they probably could have paid it off in a better way. But it had a shelf life, and I wasn't amused.
I think this is the point. This too has a shelf life, and I think it's peaking just right for that.
Mm.
And why? Well, like, go with it. You know, it's a hot hand, but I appreciate it's not a supremely.
I'm a hater.
It's not a valuable one. Like, I wanted to make that argument clear because I'm not suggesting that like if they don't. That's from WWE. Another one you've screwed up. It was booking 101. Like, I'm absolutely not saying that. It could just be fun.
Yeah.
Like,
There's loads of like serious blood feuds, yeah, and like
you can have it all.
You might get Gunther versus Gable. If you want good wrestling, you've got it in spades. Yeah. Yep. We got another hot tag after another break. Ciampa ran wild and eventually ended up colliding with Balor. And Pat McAfee said 16 abs just collided. The crowd sort of got into it towards the end. Truth runs wild. On Priest hits a scissors kick, knocks Dom off the apron. Flatliner gets a two count. Miz and DX take out the rest of Judgment Day. Truth countered a choke slam into a cradle, which really the crowd nibbled on. But then Priest escaped. I think he went for an AA. But he got out whatever it was, hit the South of Heaven, 1, 2, 3.
It's just, it's all in Truth and the people's investment of Truth that I just continue to enjoy. Like the bits, evidently, like the bit, it's all very subjective. But like when in these buildings, when Truth gets over, and there was like last week, there was, you could hear chants for him in other segments where like the characters had nothing to do with him. There were just people wanting to see R-Truth coming out. It's like I say, it's just a hot hand. It's what I like. Again, more than the action, truthfully, because a lot of it is pretty basic.
I've got two comments to make on this match. One is, broadly, this was kind of a sub Young Bucks, nowhere near as inventive as their best work in that sort of genre. That style of match, just done in an okay way, I guess. The other thing, right, and again, it really annoys me how I feel like I'm on an island. I'm the only one pointing out that there's actively horrendous work goes on in these WWE TV matches, but it's like, why doesn't anyone point this out? You go on certain websites, oh, this role was great. I can understand why people thought it, but like, let's point out the bad guys. Let's be fair and impartial. Dominic Mysterio, right, does something that I would describe maybe 10 times worse than a flying nothing. I hate the flying nothing, right? I want to speak to a wrestler, okay, and clarify this once and for all. So when you do the flying nothing, which I'm using as my example, is a terrible wrestling plot gap, right? Logic gap. Where, and I'm going to use that to say there's something even worse, and Dominic Mysterio did it. Surely, right, you could pretend. If the whole point of the spot is, right, I need to fly into the direction of this guy, or this person, so I can get super kicked, or code break it, or whatever. The super kick especially, can you not pretend to throw a flying axe handle? The idea that you're meant to be doing something, so that a flying nothing becomes a flying axe handle. Is it sort of, no, you can't do that because you need your hands in a certain place to protect your face or whatever. Is there a like safety reason why you don't do a flying axe handle, or at least pretend like you're doing something and not just willingly flying into a strike, which could ostensibly concuss you? It's one of my least favorite things. I talk about intent all the time, right? So that's the baseline for something that really frustrates me, that makes no sense. There's a goddamn bit in this match, right, where I think it's Ciampa is on the outside, and Dominic Mysterio, so Ciampa's by the announce table. Dominic Mysterio is sort of around the right angle of the ring, if you want. He jumps over the steps to just run into something, like a super kick maybe, and he runs in the wrong f***ing direction, so he then has to stop and say, right, oh God, I'm in the wrong place. I almost didn't get my ass kicked there. So then he turns around and goes into the super kick. What are you trying to do?
Yeah.
Like, it's bad enough when you put your body on a play for someone to kick, right, in wrestling, the flying nothing. And it happens in AEW and it happens in WWE every single week, and I hate it, right? To, like, be so polite as to go, oh, sorry, almost didn't get my ass kicked there. Ooh, what a boner that almost was. And then go, almost didn't get kicked in the face. Like, when's he going to get it?
Yeah, well, yeah, probably never. We talked about this, didn't we? Like, he's a manager in a managerless era of wrestling who can do enough.
Was infuriated
to go out there and wrestle, but you're not wrong about this. Like, the people should pick at these faults.
It's
in
just
matches.
Annoying.
But it is. Do I care? No. Like, not to.
We'll always have Mania 39.
Well, no, not even sound flippant about that. Like, when I'm watching that, like,
but does it not just think I cannot take this emulated combat, which is the core of everything?
I would be
That's
more,
what this is.
I don't know. I would be more, there's a longer form chat in this. I would be more narked about seeing that or a spot similar to that in Chad Gable versus Ivar than I was here. I have differing expectations of
like someone made the point on Twitter that you're meant to think is crap, but you can't do that forever.
No, that's not the pass at this point. Not for the thing you're mentioning as well.
He's meant to be crap. I get it.
That would be throwing a wheat chop or something like that. He is weak. He's limp. Whatever. That's not that.
Removed from the point.
I sort of feel like I've got a quality adjustment filter that goes up and down per what I'm watching, whether that be because of the wrestle involved or because of the
initials.
I apply it to AEW as well. Like, you have to sometimes.
So bad work is permissible in a WWE TV match. Good work is boring in an AEW match.
No, but if it's by great characters, I don't care what the work looks like.
Great characters, stop saying great. You do that on purpose, one. Yeah, you piece of fucking trash.
If there are people I'm invested in, it's a character forward mindset where I'll be really into what they're doing. Will they win? Will they lose?
I do get
the advantages. You know,
still not good enough.
We get a video package showing the Rock's promo from SmackDown.
Oh my god!
Yes, we're gonna be buddies. You know, me and you. You know what's cool?
What?
We haven't spoke about this. How awesome! Did you see the tweet? Killers in the Jungle.
What's this?
Oh, my God, you didn't get a hard on. I got a hard on.
He's trying to get his name over. No, they wouldn't. He didn't get said on TV.
I saw this on the
notes for the SmackDown. I was like, what's that mean?
I don't think they'll say killers on WWE TV and murder and stuff like that. It's just not in their playbook.
They call themselves.
That's what Dwayne wants to call him and Roman, the Killers in the Jungle. How awesome is that?
Yes.
How awesome is Heel Rock?
The moment he walked. We're setting records here. I was like, I know what he's about to do here. Bunch of assholes in the ring.
Oh my god.
Anyway,
we're gonna be buds.
It's a long
one. Do the one right there.
Or did he?
Did Bron Breakker? Anyway, Jackie Redmond's with Sami Zayn in the back. He's made a difficult decision. He's hitting the pause button on his issues with Drew McIntyre because it's become an obsession. He's gotten this way before, but he needs to focus on his path to WrestleMania. He needs to trust the feeling in his gut. Not only was a path to WrestleMania, but a chance to do something historic. He will be a champion. There's a chance.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm hoping. That's all I needed, just a glimpse of that.
Sami Zayn, Logan Paul?
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah.
Options.
Later on, Shinsuke cut a promo on Zayn, saying, "You whine little bitch. You want to be the underdog? I'll make you the underdog. You can bask in everyone's sympathies and they're going to face off next week."
I know you won. I know Nakamura beat Zayn. So if it's like, if you can't complain, I'll beat you again. It's not like the Cody thing where he just loses and then continues to get another rematch. But it is proper Ross and Mike. But you left. Nakamura at this point, isn't it? He just keeps inserting himself into programs. But you left.
Then we got the elimination.
Even when he's a winner, he's a loser.
Yeah.
Then we got the Elimination Chamber promo train, basically. Becky Lynch comes out with a new hat.
Malibu Becky.
She's got a lot of...
What did he say?
Malibu Becky.
She's done a lot of great things in her career, not many new things to do, but for the first time in her career, she's going to be inside the Elimination Chamber. She needs to win it. It's inevitable that me and Rhea have kept bumping into each other. It's going to be the fight of their lives. Ripley's been the talk of the town for the last year, but she's been propped up by a band of merry men, the Judgment Day. I'm the biggest threat to her. I'm the best I've ever been. So is everyone else. Five of WWE's most promising stars will also be in the chamber. She doesn't have anything against anyone else, any of the others, except Tiffany Stratton. Liv Morgan interrupts. She talks about the fact that obviously her and Rhea used to be partners, and then she got injured and reminds Becky that she's the last one to beat Rhea Ripley. Out comes Raquel Rodriguez.
You say reminds Becky. I feel like she was reminding all of us because there was an awful lot of lore to this Liv Morgan thing. And it was a bit like when Sid, you'd be like, remind me again who Bobby Roode won the United States title off and whatever. Like, Liv Morgan reels off like six things that are like things that have been stuck in the back of my mind about Rhea Ripley.
And I was thinking,
and you're like, oh yeah, that did happen. Oh god, yeah, that did happen. Like, I don't know if that's a fair play or a hair ruffler or what. It's like, there's a lot there. Like, she's held on to that, and at least they're letting her use it, I suppose. But it's a bit weird, isn't it? Like, she's been out injured. That's it. There's no story beyond that.
Raquel came out and said, could be Nia Jax. Let's not forget who could be champion after Saturday. And I'm the only one big enough and strong enough to take out either woman, which I thought was a nice line. Naomi came out. Becky welcomed her back. She said, I didn't just come back just to come back. I returned to climb my way to the top because that's where I belong. Tiffany Stratton comes out next. She said Naomi had left an empty space when she left.
She said what?
I left an empty space when you left. And the only space I want to be in is the center of the goddamn universe. I don't care about the past. And that's what I see when I look at the rest of you. Bianca Belair. Bianca Belair comes out. Says, look, none of you will ever be me. I'm the only one who's actually won a chamber. I'm going to continue my undefeated streak. And you can't spell WrestleMania without EST. Tiffany says, just so last year. No, literally, like you picked last year.
That was a good line. That was a good line.
And a big brawl breaks out, and then Nia Jax just kills everybody.
Superb Nia Jax beatdown. Notwithstanding, this was rubbish.
This was absolutely awful. It was like the amount of exposition. Like, you know, I hate it to begin with. This was absolutely brutal. More brutal than I expect the match to be on Saturday. Right, can we talk about Elimination Chamber?
Yeah,
about this first.
Yeah,
there's nothing to say. It was exposition, volleys.
I like it when they have to do the exposition volleys and the other characters in trying to sell that it's not blatant exposition have to sell it like they're hearing it for the first time. Oh, yeah, she made some pretty good points there, actually.
I did like the bit where I think it was Bianca and Becky. Like, I think Tiff attacked Liv or whoever. And those two were like, well, the only two left. Get into it. But yes, so we have Liv Morgan, Raquel Rodriguez, Naomi, Becky Lynch, Bianca Belair, and Tiffany Stratton in the Elimination Chamber. Sige, how do you see it going?
Well, we'll talk about the Women's Elimination Chamber match, and let's talk more broadly about the Elimination Chamber PLE in general, at least at time of recording. I think it looks ass.
Oh. All right.
If you saw this
lineup,
four matches.
Same as the Rumble. Because you've got the two big matches and you've got the two smaller ones in the middle. That's, so I'm assuming.
That's what terrifies me. That's kind of what terrifies me. If this remains four matches, oh boy, I think we're not in for a good show. And I'll tell you why. Triple H likes to book long-ass matches. We see it on his television. We saw it at TakeOver. And regrettably, this will live with me forever. We saw it in his own matches at WrestleMania. Okay? It's one thing to do these, what, 70-minute Rumble matches? Right. Do we need the Elimination Chamber matches to go more than half an hour?
No.
But we will.
Yes.
We almost certainly 45 will.
Minimum for the men's, I would say.
Oh, it's just, I don't think that's necessary at all.
5-minute intervals?
Yes.
I hope the screens are big. And even then, it's not a guarantee of an atmosphere because there's something about the stadium backdrop, the weakness of this card, and the... like the visibility, I guess, if you're a punter in that huge stadium with the chamber, which itself is, even in an arena, you're like, you kind of, it's like a very thick structure, you know, to actually like look through. I just worry about the strength of it. Well, I don't worry about it. You know, it's like when football pundits say, I worry for them.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not worried about Luton. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't care about Luton. I like this little crappy stadium, but the novelty of that wear off soon enough. I'm not worried about this.
We never like to see this. I think he does, actually.
Yeah.
WWE has a terrible night. I think it's exactly what he was after.
Let's face it. They have telegraphed the life out of the Women's Chamber match. Becky Lynch is winning this. Becky Lynch went nose-to-nose with Rhea Ripley at the press conference. Mm-hmm. They've interacted on screen. It's one thing to foreshadow or tease the thing that's happening in the medium to long term after the thing that happens in the short term. Again, I make this argument quite frequently. Episodic television in professional wrestling is kind of a flawed model. There's always internal consistencies because wrestlers have to have friends, but sometimes you need to have a heat angle. You know, you need to do something this week because you need to build to the main event of the pay-per-view, which sells like the most pay-per-views or whatever, but you kind of have to do predictable stuff on the way. That's a common flaw with the episodic TV wrestling model. There's a way to kind of do it halfway elegantly. They haven't done that with this. It's so obvious that Rhea's going over. And that means there are 50% of this Elimination Chamber card is like stunningly predictable. They've told you what's going to happen, which is not good. The other 50% is the men's chamber match, which has been, since day one, the genesis of the moment of the World Heavyweight title, they've told you, canonically, it is a consolation prize. That was the kayfabe storyline explanation for this title existing. There are a lot of over characters
mm.
in this men's chamber match, but my God, who forgot? Drew McIntyre, very good at being methodical. Randy Orton, the dictionary definition of methodical. You have got LA Knight.
Yeah.
Love the act. Love the bit. I would argue there's a bit more substance to it
mm-hmm.
than some people would.
Mm-hmm.
He's not confused with a plunder brawl specialist who's going to be amazing in this environment.
Can he do the vertical leap onto the pod?
Logan Paul.
Mike's
exciting.
Able to do that.
Exciting
He'll
for
do
this
some
match.
Mad spot in yeah. there.
So that's going to elevate it. Lashley, he could be fun. Kevin Owens is always a lunatic. There's a, this match stands a chance of being, this could be the fabled great, but there's a 50% of the field, even with Drew on the form that he's in, could has the potential to lower its excitement value and make it really drag and sag. And Mustache Mountain and a tag. Like, they're not over.
Excuse me, Sitch. Please.
The new Catch Republic in a tag. You. I mean, they're talented wrestlers, but
yeah,
they're like the 6 years out of fashion at this point.
They're not winning the belts.
No.
And they're not winning the belts. I think this looks poor for a stadium show.
You are forgetting the Grayson Waller effect.
This looks poor. Poor as balls for a stadium show. Hamflet,
yes.
You're the Fed guy.
Yes.
Dr. Fed.
Yes.
Tell me why it's going to be good.
To use a Jim Rossism, it's an all sizzle, all stick kind of night for WWE. This, it's going to look fantastic, I think.
Oh, yeah.
The stadium set, and to the point about the Rhea Ripley, Nia Jax match, that's going to have the big fight feel, you know, there's because Rhea Ripley is going to be a massive star. I can't disagree with any of your takes on the results or the quality of the matches. But I don't necessarily think that is what...
Forget about the fireworks, aren't I?
Yes, you are.
How could I forget the...
And the Australian flag.
I'm sorry.
And the Australian flag drone.
English, can you edit that out? I forgot about the fireworks.
Forgot about the fireworks, guys. Elimination Chamber.
I'm sorry, man.
Elimination Chamber has, for the longest time, always been... a bit of an annoyance. It's an inconvenience. Obviously, when they've got two belts, it's our way to make mm-hmm. somebody a contender for it. But having this show where you potentially got to put the title on the line against five other contenders this close to WrestleMania or...
Losing eyes by the crowd, this.
Yeah, we've seen it multiple times over the years, how it can be really awkward that it's this specific show you've got to get through. I know why in WWE's mind they think it works, but it's quite awkward from a narrative point of view. But yeah, I don't think this will be about the quality of the match. I think it'll be about how it all looks. I think it'll be a good night for some of the overstars to get just an incredible response. Stadiums are stadiums. You don't know if the noise is going to disappear, but certainly they will look temporarily like massive stars on a show that typically is skippable. I don't think this is skippable strictly because of all of that. Like, and because it's on a nice time for us. But like,
oh, but think of the poor American viewers, Ham.
It is.
You have to wake up early in the morning to watch wrestling. I mean, what must that be like?
The things I want to look at.
Clash of the Castle atmosphere, payback quality.
Yeah. The things I want to look at are the reasons.
Told you the ace in the hole that they've got.
You could just get like a magazine, you know.
I want both.
You could just get
this,
a magazine.
And then I could get the Elimination Chamber program sent from somebody that's actually at the show. And I've got both. No, like, honestly, this is earnest. Like, I'm watching this as much because I want to look at it. I want to see the people in this setting. I think the Men's Elimination Chamber match might be all right. I think Rhea Ripley versus Nia Jax will be pretty good.
That'll be an over-delivery.
Like, Rhea Ripley hasn't got the matches. If you look at her last year as champion, especially if you consider where it started with Charlotte Flair, she has not got the matches out of this run.
Yeah. Zelina Vega was fun in the in Backlash.
And that's the point, yeah. Right? There was a certain peak there because of the location, because of the atmosphere, and because of the vibe. You will get that again here, and it will do a lot. I think Nia Jax is form, dare I say, at the moment. So she's stands to have, like, she's going to potentially have her best match at the best time for her to have it. So I think that one could over-deliver. The Women's Chamber is too predictable, so that what you're going to watch is a series of potential... Like, Bianca Belair might want to do something incredible physically. Cool, but... it's all to build up to Becky Lynch winning after 35 to 40 minutes.
Look, if the Rumble's any indication as well, these matches will look way too similar.
Mm. Possibly, yeah, possibly.
I think it's one of those where I don't disagree with either of you. I think we're all sort of unified on
so you don't
winners.
Disagree.
We're all unified on the winners. So Becky, Judgment Day, Rhea, Drew.
Drew, yeah.
But I think, well, first of all, Becky, if you open the show, like you say, top and tail of the show with the chamber matches and the women's match opens, in defending WWE somewhat, if Becky wins, it's not like, well, you've telegraphed. I mean, you already have, but you've not you've telegraphed who wins out of Rhea and Nia, because arguably she's got a story with both of those.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm more
they've underplayed that, by the way.
They've underplayed it.
Yeah. It's a really nice thing they set up and they haven't really used it.
I'm arguably more interested in what else happens in the women's chamber match, because I'm looking going, right, what's Naomi's just come back. What's Naomi doing at WrestleMania? What's Bianca Belair doing at WrestleMania? What's Tiffany Stratton doing at WrestleMania? Mm-hmm. I love Tiffany Stratton from
the timing of the promotion is noticeable. They could have just waited until after Mania.
Mm.
Yeah. So just keep her off the card.
Is Tiffany going to, you know, because I know people are trying to put Jade Cargill in here somewhere as well. You could do Bianca versus Tiffany. When people asked me a few months back what I'd like to see Bianca doing if she wasn't in, I was like, that's a really good step up for Tiff.
Tiffany, Stratton and Naomi.
Tiff, it's Tiffy time.
We're not that close.
they had hostilities from the first SmackDown they were on together. That's there. The thing at this Women's Chamber, and again, it's not none of this is by accident. These are the last six from the Rumble. Mm. Like it was these six and Bayley. Like this is, you know, you were being shown there. Well, sorry, in the original plan where Jade Cargill gets in, now it's Raquel Rodriguez instead.
It's not the same.
But plans had changed. You know, it was going to be that six. Jade Cargill versus Bianca Belair, I still think is the match. Mm-hmm. Bianca Belair was talking it up at that Vegas thing. The Rumble spot was showing you it and how cool it would be. So I still think that's the match, whether or not Jade Cargill appears.
Can't call that match, can you? Bianca's streak versus Jade's first singles match.
And it's a huge feather in Jade's cap.
It's not even happened yet.
If she wins. Yeah. But yeah, so like she might make an appearance again. Like we're talking in the office before because we're all just so hyped about it. Sige, I was cynical about this, to be honest. I was pretty cynical. But Sige made the point. He was like, Hamlet, it's the Fed. Anything can happen. I was like, Sige, you're right. The Rock might turn up. That was what we were talking about.
If you look at The Rock's past, 5, 10 WWE TV appearances, maybe it's because he doesn't want to be advertised and the quarter hour doesn't look good. But it's almost invariably, other than last week, a surprise.
It's a monster Grayson Waller effect because he's going to come out, initially get the big chance, probably turn heel on the crowd, a Christian in Canada sort of thing, allowing Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins to be the biggest baby faces they want, you know, they want to be against him. I don't know. I don't think we're going to have like lots to talk about from the matches. But
I think they're setting up LA Knight versus Logan Paul in the men's chamber as well, for example.
There's WrestleMania ramifications out the ass on this card.
I hope so.
And that's all.
We are on the road.
We are on the road. Capital T, capital R.
What if Bobby Lashley's pod gets corrupted by the Final Testament?
You haven't seen them in their final form from this week's SmackDown, have you?
Oh, I saw what they did to poor Big Body Havi.
Yeah. Oh, you did. They've got.
I saw that. Yeah. Jesus.
They've got their own T-shirt. They've got the special entrance. They're great.
You can hear a rare piss on can.
But it's. I mean, it's just nice to be able to watch it at a reasonable time. To be fair.
All right, okay, that's better than AEW then, isn't it?
Wasn't about that. But let us know your thoughts, Henry.
Yeah, I think it is
in the comments.
Yeah, I think
section.
It is. It can be a product that's like around a 7. It could be a 10. It just hasn't been on for a while. Nice time in the morning.
Whoa.
You're right.
Yeah.
Let us know your thoughts in the comment section. All
right. Please do. I'm interested.
At What Culture WWE. Gunther got a promo on Raw following this. He says he's the greatest IC champion of all time. He's going to make Jay understand that he doesn't belong in the main event. He's going to have to keep dreaming. Then we got the Shinsuke promo on Sami Zayn and Callum Walsh, the boxer, was in the crowd. Then we got Chad Gable versus Ivar early on.
Oh, my God.
Yes. Ivar slams Gable into the barricade. They go to a break. We come back. Ivar hits a sit-out powerbomb for 2. Gable ducks a kick, chop blocks Ivar's leg. He keeps, the story of the match is he keeps going for that German suplex of his. Can't get it initially. Tries an ankle lock as well. Ivar kicks out of it. Gable sends him out of the ring. Ivar shoves him into the side of the ring and goes to do that squish against it, the crossbody, but Gable rolls out of the way and Ivar collides and the screens on the side of the ring go a bit funny. They go back inside. Gable goes for another German. Ivar blocks it, hits a spinning kick and then hits a seated senton on Chad Gable.
Yeah.
For a 2 count.
Literally squashed him like a bug.
Yes. But Gable avoids.
I really bought that near fall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I thought you're not getting up from that. Oh, yeah.
Sammy.
Yeah.
Jeff Hardy connection. Like, all body.
Gable avoids the moonsault, though. Finally gets him up for that German suplex. Hits a moonsault of his own. Gets a two count. So transitions into the ankle lock. Gets the submission victory. Out comes Alpha Academy to celebrate afterwards.
It just ruled so hard, didn't it? Chad Gable, like, ever reliable, even in a story that, like, this Fu-Ed is long over, realistically, and yet somehow draws you into a match in such a way that, like, come on, Chad, you finally need to finish the story. This story that I haven't cared about for months, but God, please finish it.
Put the book at the back of the cupboard for a few weeks.
His, as a baby face. And it's like, if you look back through his whole career, it's been used for things like hot tags. It's been used for getting nothing stories over like this one. His ability to take the physical desperation of, say, working for the suplex or overcoming a size difference and turning it into this just most incredible overcoming the odds. Like, he just applies that context to it, even though it's fundamentally meaningless. It's a magic trick. It's a pro wrestling magic. It's the art of it, ultimately, because You're supposed to think whatever the wrestlers are trying to make you think, and there are a few better at manipulating that than Chad Gable. He goes into cold situations and makes them boiling hot. Not to say this was, I know
an alchemist.
Yeah, I know there's been story, but it's been over and done with for ages, and they've just been retreads every week. It's been, well, you've got these guys, they'll fight Ivar, then you do the women, and then you come back to this. And the women's match was appalling when it took place. That pretty much killed the story dead anyway. He's a miracle worker, and the fact that this is done now, right off the back of the Gunther House shows, which Sid, you mentioned, he's actually winning by DQ. I think people are allowed to be I'm not saying it's definitely going to happen. I just think people are allowed to have optimism again. That it's just interesting that one thing has been like tied off right as Gunther is suddenly free. That's a nice thing to be optimistic about.
Should have said probably let it play out, along with many other stories.
Yeah. I just love Chad Gable, man.
Yes.
Chad Gable's class. There's a certain class of professional wrestler where wrestlers, more often than not, have the same in-ring arsenal, the same dramatic devices they do in their matches. The best ones know when to do it. That's the key, right? But, like, it's like trying to explain to someone who was raised maybe on Ruthless Aggression, or the older I get, depressingly, the WWE after then, why was Hulk Hogan so great? And it's like, I don't know. Just magic.
Yeah.
He's just magic. Like, mechanically, good in Japan. he still wasn't even like that high standard in Japan. He was
Should he use the axe bomber in WWE?
Yeah.
An axe handle.
It's hard to explain the magic of Hulk Hogan in the ring. I must clarify, complete arsehole out of it. That needs to be said every single time. But it's hard to explain the magic, because magic itself cannot be explained. That's what makes it magic. Hulk goddamn Hogan had this chokehold on people in the arena. Dave Meltzer talks about how people can go into an arena thinking Hulk Hogan's a piece of trash, or before that was revealed, you could go into an arena when it was a more naive time and think, oh God, Hulk Hogan's a political shark, Hulk Hogan's a carny, Hulk Hogan's like a self-serving arsehole, and you sit down in that arena and hear Real American and just lose it.
I've told the story on podcast before, 2010. In what is still to this day's last match on Cage Match is when they won, and he's in Adidas tracky bottoms because he can't get into his tights, and he's doing the ear cup, and he's gone to the three sides of the ring and not ours, and he's about to leave, and he's doing the tease. And he's like, don't go. You haven't listened for my cheer. It's
and then he does it.
And then he does it. And you're like, oh, thank God. Oh, Hulk knows. I've lived it.
He had people thinking, oh, he's not going to win. He's not going to win this, but it's Hulk Hogan. Yeah. I've experienced this as a child quite often, maybe as an adult sometimes as well, right? I hate Hulk Hogan, but that much is true. Chad Gable doing the deadlift, German, makes me think he cannot do it every single time. Chad Gable is the nicer work rate Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
One of the most resourceful professional wrestlers. I wish every other wrestling match went as long as Chad Gable's, because if they're as good as that, you can accomplish loads in a shorter runtime. Every single time I think, he can't deadlift him. He's done it every match, though, against a larger opponent, but he's so great that he has that magic.
It feels like WWE is set up to test if Chad Gable can have a bad match. You've got, like...
I mean, Ivar's good.
He's great, but, like, you've got 5 hours...
Great, but Is this a runner that like, you're trying
no,
to
No, no, I didn't even think
Tony Khan over here. It's like a podcasting with Tony Khan.
On a Tuesday after last night's Raw, I just always feel super positive. Yeah, I've got this to talk about in NXT still coming. It's just like everything is great. But no, Chad get like 5 hours a week of Raw and SmackDown. Countless tag teams that he's had, drag kicking and screaming at being good. A load of feuds that have meant nothing fundamentally. Sometimes wrestling just for wrestling's sake. There are a lot of tests there to test. Can you have a bad match? And the answer is still no.
Mm.
He is, like, if he does get Gunther and if he does win, I don't even know how long I want that reign to be. Because I almost want the world to stop. He's done it. Let's quit while we're all ahead. It's Seth Rollins breaking the shield now. Mm. Like, what? It can only go down at some point. It can only, at some point, not feel as magic as it does when Chad Gable goes out there.
Get away. I guess he can beat big guys. Wait a second. Here comes Obafemi from NXT. Oh, my God.
All right, we're back. Yeah, done it.
McIntyre gets interviewed by Kathy Kelly. He says, look, Rhodes has been on a hell of a run this past year. Only one person has beaten him until tonight. I'm now the second. Yeah, some people are saying I'm a hypocrite, but I had no issue with what happened. Of course, I wanted to attack Solo and Jimmy on the spot, but I can't think like that anymore. I'm thinking big picture. Bye, Jenny. I'm doing this for the world title. I'm doing this for Raw. I'm doing this for the fans, guys. I just beat Rhodes. I'm going to face LA Knight on Friday, and then I'm going to win the Chamber on Saturday. I'm the true workhorse of WWE and a future champion. Great stuff. And then New Day are in the back. Xavier and Kofi Kingston. Xavier says, Jey Uso's going to beat Gunther tonight. And then our turn comes next week. Kofi talks about Imperium trying to end his career and take his head, but they didn't get the job done. We're the industry standard, they say. That's why everyone comes for us. There's nobody better than us. Imperium might have thought it was over. It's not over until we say it is. It's a street fight next week, and they pull out kendo sticks and Kingston taps the New Day theme on a box.
Enjoyed this, in spite of myself, from New Day. Kendo sticks, I never want to see again. Bored of them. They get used all the time. But New Day,
you'll see them next week.
I know. New Day believe themselves. I'll buy it. They're like, they believe it. They're speaking with conviction. They're, like, the way that they've
power of positivity
pivoted slightly with this feud with Imperium, where it's kind of like dragged them into the gutter a little bit. All the matches, all the attempts to have matches have just ended up in brawls. So it feels lived in. And I bought this from them. It's nice to see them doing this sort of thing. They've needed this 10 years this year, which is amazing. Absolutely amazing that they've reached a point they've not really need to compromise too much about who the New Day are. But this is just a nice shift for the characters without a heel turn. They're baby faces, but it's just shifting slightly what they do.
Main event time.
Oh.
Gunther versus Jey Uso. Like the last time they faced each other, Gunther just hoied him into the barricade about a minute in to take us to break. Jey fights back, but Gunther does that thing he always does. He's like, the guys are facing Gunther's kind of building up a head of steam, and then he just chops him out of midair. Gunther wanted to powerbomb into the announce table, but Jey backdrops him and hits a Samoan drop onto the table. Sets up for that running attack, but Gunther hits that running drop kick of his and a powerbomb for two, puts him in a Boston Crab. Jey gets a rope break. Gunther hits an uppercut, but Jey knocks him out of the ring and suicide dives onto him for another break. They trade strikes. Again, Gunther just puts it all into a chop that drops Jey. Three more hard chops. He starts mocking him. So Jey slips out of a powerbomb and spears him for two. Jey goes up top, but Gunther slams him down and splashes him for two. Jey fights back, hits a spear, and the commentators are like, ring awareness there from Gunther, though. He rolls to the apron. So Jey just spears him on the apron again, spears him outside the ring, gets him back in the ring. Another spear, an Uso splash. He goes for the cover. One, two, the bell starts ringing before the three has been counted, and it's Jimmy Uso banging away at the bell, and he pulls his hood back to reveal himself. Jey doesn't completely take himself out of the match. He's not a complete idiot. He super kicks Gunther. Security trying to get rid of Jimmy, but Jimmy's not going anywhere, so he dives onto him, gets back into the ring, goes for another splash, but Gunther gets his knees up. Roll up, one, two, three. Gunther just retains. Jimmy has cost Jey Uso, and he attacks him after the match, hits him with an Uso splash, and they show the replays, and Jimmy hits one more to stand tall over his brother as the show goes off the air.
I'll go first, because you're going to be higher on this, and why don't we leave on a happy note, right?
No, I just want to say, I don't throw the word great around, but this wasn't great.
It wasn't great, was it?
It was very good at points, but never great.
Ah.
Yeah, well, I think we haven't talked about this.
We haven't talked about this.
It's didn't make the office chat, which maybe says it all.
Maybe says it all. I, you know what people say, right? I mean, I'm doing a ridiculous analogy again. I just compared Chad Gable to Hulk Hogan. There's a kernel of truth in that. Yeah. You know what people say? That's too much of a good thing. Uh-huh. And they say, come on, would you really have a Big Mac every day? I'm thinking, I'd probably be watching it.
Yeah, me too.
If I had a Big Mac at like 12 o'clock every single day of my life, I don't think I would ever get bored of that.
Two Mackies is a day because the breakfasts are good. Mm. So yeah, I'd have two Mackies a day. Nuts. I would.
I know you would. I could have a Big Mac every single day. I think I'm finally ready to have Gunther lose that Intercontinental title. And it looks like that's where the wind's blowing.
So glad after all this we're f***ing again. Because I felt exactly the same watching this.
I'm kind of ready for it to be over because like I think Gunther, right, top three in the world right now. Who else is there? For my tastes and for objectivity.
Brian.
Brian Danielson. Of course he is. He's the best. And if you don't like Brian Danielson, you don't like professional wrestling. Mm. I'm sorry. I'm going to... Gunther... A lot of people would have Ospreay.
Yep.
Not necessarily my favorite, but that's maybe the consensus.
Roman, probably.
Consensus slash my taste, Gunther's top three.
Yeah.
I always think you can't hate the Fed. Gunther's in it. How can I hate the Fed? Gunther's genuinely.
I get so revved up for a Cody Rhodes match. Yeah. Genuinely, I do.
Cody's like well up there as well. The thing with Gunther is that if I exclusively watch WWE, I'd probably still be like, oh, yes, Gunther again. I get to watch Gunther. I don't just watch WWE. And the thing about Gunther is that it was magic at the start of that Levesque era. It's like, there's fives. There's actual, honest-to-God, five-star matches off four and threes on WWE pay-per-view with the triple threat and the clash match. It's like, Jesus Christ, this is great. When was the last time you had a match that like came anywhere near a five or anywhere near a four and three? Mm-hmm. I'm seeing a lot of 3.75s and fours out of Gunther. And very slowly, the impression is, well, I get that every single week from a lot of different wrestlers. Yeah. I just don't think the Gunther match feels as special as it did about half a year
Formula's
ago.
Formula's creaking a little bit, isn't it?
Yeah.
A little bit now.
Yeah. A little bit. And like, I think you can level up.
Yeah,
but the thing is, he's going to be...
New stakes will help that.
New stakes will help. And I've made the point of the reason why, and I know visa issues are a reason why he can't go to Perth, but domestic pay-per-views doesn't really do that many matches. And I think it's because they're saving the Gunther PLE match for when he's in that world title picture. And it's Gunther. You're going to get long, great matches out of him all of the time. But I'm ready for a break. Truly, I'm ready for a break. They're just not hitting in the same way as they did 6 months ago.
I did enjoy this.
I didn't. It's Gunther. The floor is ridiculous. He's got a Danielson floor, but at the minute, he doesn't have that Danielson ceiling.
I like their chemistry. I think Jey Uso as a singles wrestler needed this match because you had to buy him again as somebody like, we've gone through the Jey Uso learning how to be a singles wrestler bit and having like Cody helping him. And then he has this Iron Man run that was, I think, designed to illustrate that and failed miserably because they just didn't focus on him anywhere near enough. This match was quite a good recovery of that because you saw him all alone, no net, against the unbeatable guy. And like you've highlighted it in your review, the stuff like the repeated spears was a great example of that. Mm. This is working. I'm just going to keep, it's like spamming a move on a video game. Yeah. Like, I'll just keep doing that. It's working. Nobody else has stopped him, so I might as well try it this way. And he's still, Jason's still figuring himself out as a singles wrestler. I thought they had really good chemistry to tell that story. And I've got to give credit here. It gave me no pleasure to say, as we were watching the Rumble and then the weeks that followed, I think they've killed Jay and Jimmy. I think they've killed it.
It's got a big reaction in the building, to be objective and fair,
I thought they killed it by even putting them together in the Rumble was a lack of faith in how much people really bought into it. And then the exchanges they had were more for laughs, and the brand split element of the story has been pretty much abandoned, and that was really key to it in the initial stages. Now, Jimmy Uso going out there and saying, what I do is cost you singles titles. You a stupid little brother to think that you could get anywhere in life without me. That's the heat. They have found the heat at the right time with a good, believable beatdown that went down really well with the crowd. I don't know, maybe it's just me calling it a recovery, but I think this felt like a really strong recovery for this match that will definitely now happen at WrestleMania.
I did tell you. I have been saying this for quite some time. You said immediately after SummerSlam, oh, Jimmy Uso's dead. No, stick with him. Oh, no, he's goated on SmackDown.
Happy to admit when I'm wrong.
And I did say, I said after Rumble, I was like, this is what they guys laid it out. I said, he's gonna interfere in Jay's match.
You have a brilliant
Jay's
mind.
Gonna say, Jay's going to say, look, I let it slide. You cost me the world title. You cost me, you know, Bloodline, da-da-da-da. I let it slide. We went to different brands. I know there's kind of a grey area, obviously, with has always been with WWE.
It should be a red one and a blue one, that sort of thing.
Yes. But you've...
Forget about that. Forget about the complaints.
Yeah, you've done it. You've done it again, and now this is it. They're going to have this epic blood feud. Gable's getting gunned
through. Are you acting like the only person who said this?
And, well, because
well,
I
fair
said,
enough, you did say let that. Jimmy Uso play out. Was there a soul alive on this planet, shut up, who didn't think Jimmy Uso was going to interfere last night?
No, I know. I understand that, but I'm just going to lay out quickly from literally this episode of Monday Night Raw. Jimmy Uso is going to face Jey Uso at WrestleMania. Chad Gable is going to face Gunther at WrestleMania, as I've said from the beginning. And oh, look, Cody Rhodes going to win the world title. Let him play out at WrestleMania 39 into WrestleMania 40. And I've had a week off. I'm just tired. Tired of being right all the time. Right, let us know your thoughts on this episode of Monday Night Raw in the comment section below or on X at WhatCultureWWE.
Well, that was word for word in the notes.
You can let us know your thoughts on everything, as I said, on X. X at WhatCultureWWE. You can follow Michael Hamflett on X at
Michael Hamflett.
Follow Michael Sidgwick at
Emma Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. As I said, follow our brilliant producer at It's Adam Nicholas. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. But for now, this has been the Raw Review. My thanks to Michael Hamflett. It's Michael Sidgwick. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.